Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
To my successor, whoever he or she may be. Number one, stay close to the Americans. Stick up for the Ukrainians. Stick up for freedom and democracy everywhere.
Politics in general has taken total lead of its senses.
Changing one man at the top of the Tory party won't make any difference. It won't fix the problems. Let's have a fresh start for Britain. Let's have a real change of government.
You're listening to Bloomberg Westminster, your daily guide to British politics. I'm Ewan Potts.
And I'm Stephen Carroll.
Well, coming up on today's programme, the revolution will be televised as Rishi Sunak and Liz Truss prepare for their first head-to-head TV debate. We get the briefing notes from Bloomberg's Philip Aldrich and Lizzie Burden.
And the UK nearly experienced blackouts last week. We talked to our opinion columnist Javier Blas about how the country's electricity grid is going to be in your news feeds a lot more in the coming months. Plus, we'll speak to the Labour MP Olivia Blake.
But first, Stephen, we missed you in the studio last week and you rather bravely took a holiday. Did you get stuck at Dover?
I braved travel chaos. Yeah, in the bravest thing I've done this year. So I actually have the counter story of travelling because I didn't experience any trouble. I flew out of Heathrow into Munich and back, and neither of those things involved any sort of delays. My flight was delayed an hour coming back, but that's kind of regular flight disaster, but no long queues.
So
anyway, look, that's the good side of the story. Obviously, for people who were trying to get through either Dover or Folkestone, which the AA has branded as the new hotspot of holiday hell, which I have not spotted on a map recently. But there are obviously huge problems at that particular border crossing. There's this back and forth accusations between the British government and the French government about whose fault it is. Are there enough border guards? Aren't there? Weren't they prepared? Were they not? Actually, interesting hearing from Bloomberg's reporting on this, you know, saying that basically this is a problem that they knew was going to happen because essentially this was going to be the pinch point, and it's the holiday rush that's managing to make things a little bit worse. The other debate, of course, is around Eurostar services, and apparently France apparently blocking an effort to increase Eurostar frequency of Eurostar journeys between London and Paris. That was reported in The Telegraph over the weekend. The argument is that they can only manage a maximum of 13 trains a day because of Gare du Nord and the size of essentially the border control there. Of course, that's left a lot of people very unhappy on this side of the channel. But as a regular user of that train station, I can tell you there is not a lot of space.
Well, for that excellent travel update, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Did I miss anything else while I was gone?
Well, there was the matter of the Tory leadership.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
I heard of that, yeah.
So whilst you were away, we went down from, how many was it when you left? I think we still had quite a lot of candidates
a week
ago.
Yeah, I think it was five, yeah.
Yeah, but we whittled it down very, very quickly to the final two. And of course, the TV debates kick off this week. We had a YouGov poll at the end of last week, which is pretty stark, actually. 62% of Tory members said they favoured Truss and 38% Sunak. So at the moment, it looks like quite a split between the two of them. We're going to get 12 hustings around the country. That's going to be pretty gruelling for the pair of them. And the BBC debate this evening in Stoke-on-Trent, that's at 9 p.m. I'm just wondering, they're doing it after the watershed. I wonder if they're expecting some kind of like blood.
Fireworks, yeah, exactly. Adult content only available during the leaders' debate. Well, let's I suppose, discuss what we should be looking out for in this debate. We've got our senior economics reporter, Philip Aldrich, and our EMEA economy and government reporter, Lizzie Burden, with us in studio. Philip, heading into this debate, set the scene for us. What are our flashing red lights on the economic dashboard?
Well, the whole subject, the whole battle seemed to be over tax cuts at the moment.
Liz Truss is sort of positioning those as growth generating tax cuts, and Rishi obviously he came into the contest as the incumbent, effectively having been Chancellor for so long, so he can't be promising anything other than what he's already delivered. So it's a trickier argument to make. But there are bigger issues in terms of what their long-term growth strategy is, what the how they deal with the public finances, and then obviously there's been talk about Bank of England mandates, so they're talking about institutional reforms. So there's all sorts of things that have been thrown up in the air in the sort of early stages of the debate so far.
Lizzie, what else are the big dividing lines between the two? Would it be fair to say that they do agree on quite a lot of stuff?
Yeah, I think that it's underestimated how similar they actually are. You know, they both want tax cuts, they just want them on different timescales. So some, for that reason, have been arguing that Liz Truss is the Reaganite and Rishi Sunak is actually the heir to Thatcher in that regard. But if you put the tax debate aside, the BOE, you've got Brexit. They're both Brexiters now. Liz Truss, of course, voted Remain at the 2016 referendum. But annoyingly for Rishi Sunak, she is now seen as the true leaver because, you know, there's no one more zealous than a convert. So they're racing to be the first to burn all the EU regulations that have hung over since Brexit. And of course, other issues outside of economics are opening up, including they're both trying to be the toughest on China. They're both trying to be the toughest on illegal immigrants. And I think what it really shows is at this point, they're trying to appeal to the Conservative Party membership, who are a very, very different constituency to the general public that they'll have to appeal to if a general election comes.
Philip, how much do these tax plans actually hold water, and can the UK afford them?
Well, there are these fiscal rules in place, and because of inflation, although obviously inflation is hammering all of us, actually inflation is helping the public finances because the income tax thresholds are frozen, which means that, and wages are rising faster than were expected in just cash terms. So the government is collecting more money, or is expected to collect more money than was projected as recently as March. So when Liz Truss promises £35 billion of tax cuts, that, you know, our Bloomberg Economics senior analyst Dan Hansen has done some work, and he thinks that there's about £40 billion of headroom. So you can technically do this. And the question is it wise to burn up every single penny of headroom, you know, when there are other challenges on the horizon? You know, there could be worse Ukraine situation, energy crisis could get more deleterious, and you know, you've got potential increase, you know, people talking about recession, etc., and everything could get worse. So is it sensible right now to just burn every penny you got? Probably not.
And also, is it a tax cut or is it a spending issue, you know, if you're looking to try to stimulate the economy, which is the better option?
Yeah, well, there's also this, the other argument, obviously, is if you cut taxes too much and put too much money in people's pockets just when there is a high inflation driven by demand, then you're going to drive up inflation as well. So we had in America, you know, Larry Summers saying over the weekend that you should raise taxes, or you certainly should not do any tax cuts at the moment. And obviously in America, the big issue has been that Biden's tax cuts were the cause of their huge inflation spike. And now you've got the sort of replica of that policy being sort of offered under the Truss campaign anyway, without any of this associated sense of the inflation from you know, her grouping.
I think it's interesting that you've got all these economists coming out and criticising Liz Truss's economic plans, but that's clearly what she wants. She wants to take on the blob, as she calls it, the conventional wisdoms of the Bank of England, the Treasury, the City, academia, the financial press, you know, and she's saying that she wants to change this radical, change that thinking, be more radical, because that's exactly what led to the economic stagnation that we have in the UK. So when you've got city analysts saying that foreign investors are going to be driven away from the pound and gilts because of what she's saying about the Bank of England, Brexit, tax cuts, in that order of concern, I'd say, you're just playing into Liz Truss's hands.
Interesting that our economist Patrick Minford said that the way to sort out too much demand in the economy from tax cuts will be to hike interest rates to potentially 7%, which he said will be a good thing. And you did feel a bit of an intake of breath from people with mortgages around the country.
But I want to know how many of the Tory grassroots actually have mortgages, or whether they just own their homes, and whether that's actually good for them and their savings.
Well, it's a really good point, isn't it? Because the average age of a Tory party member is 57. And the demographic analysis that ONS and others have done is that, by that age, people in that age group own their homes outright. We've got a greater proportion of people owning their homes outright now than ever. Will interest rates rise for that group? They've got savings. They need the higher interest rates. So it does rather play to that electorate.
Yes. And of course, for older people, they've suffered, 10 years of virtually zero return on their savings. It's been miserable, hasn't it? So they're probably going, 7%. That sounds fantastic.
There certainly is an appeal. I mean, there's 900 billion at the last count, 900 billion of sort of savings on, instant access deposits, which has gone up quite substantially because of all those excess savings gathered in the pandemic. And it's been, it's still earning basically pretty much nothing, actually. But high interest rates may be seen differently among that group to the mortgage borrowers.
Lizzie, if you were at home playing a drinking game with a glass of water this evening while watching this debate, what are your buzzwords you're looking out for?
Oh, do you know what I hate? Up and down the country. As a northerner, that really, really gets under my skin.
What's wrong with that?
Because it's such a cheap play to the levelling up thing.
But is levelling up one of them? Is that one of the key things we should be hearing?
I think that they cannot abandon levelling up, because they're riding Boris Johnson's mandate to the next election. And that was, along with Brexit and net zero, a third of the plank. They have to make, at least on economically, they need to appeal to this red wall as well of voters whose votes they're going to need at a general election.
Okay, Philip, if you're playing with a cup of tea later on...
Well, I think I'm listening out for supply-side reforms. It's the it's just catnip to anyone who's kind of got vague interest in politics and economics and where they interact. It means nothing. It means absolutely nothing. It can be anything you want. But what it's saying is, hey, I'm going to transform the growth rate of this country.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
Let's speak now to Olivia Blake, Labour MP for Sheffield Hallam, who joins us on the line. Olivia, this is a time when there's an awful lot of focus, of course, on what's happening in the Tory party because of their leadership race. But there's a big speech on the economy today by Keir Starmer, who's laying out your party's vision for the economy. Rebecca Long-Bailey, the former Shadow Business Secretary, says the party needs to be more radical. Do you agree?
I think that we are facing some of the biggest challenges of our time, really. So I think that I probably do agree that we need to be radical, but I understand that Keir has been setting out what he thinks our priorities need to be going into the next election, which is around tackling productivity, which I think everyone can agree has been a real issue over the last 5 years and isn't one that's going to help with getting on top of rising inflation and making sure that we're in tip-top shape, which we're clearly not at the moment. And what that plays out as is a cost of living crisis for millions of families up and down the country.
Well, Bailey's been particularly critical that your party has dropped its policy of renationalising utilities. In France, of course, we've seen the state buying up the remainder of EDF and forcing EDF to cut power prices. Do you think we should be following that example?
I think it's interesting to see where the government has intervened. So, for example, in Sheffield, they intervened on Forge Masters. The MOD now owns Forge Masters, the steel plant here. And also, we saw absolute failure and collapse in the energy market in the UK very recently, with nearly 30, I think, smaller energy companies going bust. Actually, the taxpayer are paying for one of those because they were deemed to big to fail in bulk. So clearly, you know, that these decisions are quite difficult to take at a time, and I can understand why the French government would step in to buy up bits of EDF, because we've had to do the same here to prevent millions of people being exposed to failure in the market.
All of that does cost money, though, and is that something that, you know, will Labour be raising taxes to pay for increased public investment?
I think that, you know, Keir is quite clear that we have a fully costed plan. As we did going into the last election, I should say, we had the Grey Book, and I think that that was a very clear way of showing the difference between ourselves and the Conservatives, that the Tories are quite good at making lots of pledges to cut taxes and promises, and we're seeing that in the leadership election at the moment. But I think Labour are much more committed to showing that we're fiscally responsible, that we're going to have every pound and penny kind of measured out as we head into the next election. But I think, you know, the 28 billion that we've got on the table is an absolute game changer for getting to net zero, and that has to be the priority of whichever government comes to power next. And it absolutely should be the priority of the Conservative leaders that are arguing at the moment which one of them should be PM. At the moment, we haven't heard enough about that. And I think the last week, if that tells us anything, is that that has to be the number one priority for anyone in politics at the moment.
Well, something that the Tory leadership candidates have been talking about is immigration. Your Shadow Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, says that Labour would scrap the government's Rwanda policy. Is there a danger of your party sounding soft on immigration again?
I think that we've got to a point now, haven't we, where we've gone so far the other way as a country, where the Rwanda plan hasn't really come as a surprise. And if you actually think about what the Rwanda plan is, it is one of the most, you know, ineffective, expensive, but most importantly, morally bankrupt ways of dealing with an asylum system. Now, these are people who are trying to seek asylum. This isn't about migration. This is about people seeking sanctuary because they're fleeing conflicts. They're fleeing all sorts of different levels of persecution as well. For example, I've spoken a lot about LGBT plus people who have a right to claim asylum if they are at risk of persecution. And I think that it's incredibly dangerous to have a situation where we're essentially outsourcing to a very expensive situation that's going to cost hundreds of thousands of pounds. You know, there was Tory MPs in the debate that we had around the Rwanda plan saying that it would cost more than a night at the Ritz for everyone who we send over there, which I think is just kind of very telling that, you know, the economics of this doesn't make any sense. But for me, it's the moral duty that we have. If people want to claim asylum and want to seek sanctuary, you know, I represent a city of sanctuary, they're welcome to do that. I think that, you know, we would expect the exact same thing. If we were being persecuted here, if there was a war here, we would want to see the same offered to us anywhere else in the world. So, you know, this isn't about, you know, David Cameron's pipe dream of getting migration down to 10,000. Actually, we need people to come into our jobs market at the moment.
Right.
We've got massive skills shortages across the board, and that's been, you know, directly impacted by things like Brexit, but also the fact that we're not skilling up enough for our own people.
Yeah.
And that means that we've ended up with massive gaps in really strategic sectors, whether that's health or engineering or many, many different sectors as well.
Yeah, Olivia, we've been talking about the Tory leadership race on the programme. Now that we have just two candidates, which do you think is the tougher opponent for Labour?
I think there's... Oh, that's such a difficult question, because I just find it very difficult to find many strengths in either of them. I think that we've really seen what a difficult position the whole country's in if the choice is between Rishi Sunak and Liz Truss. I don't think anyone would have thought that they would be the final two in this race.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to watching the 9 p.m. debate today.
All right.
Because I think we've seen them clash before, but they clearly both have, you know, haven't got the answers that we need for the crises that we're facing
okay.
at the moment.
Olivia Blake, Labour MP for Sheffield Hallam, thank you very much for speaking to us.
Now, another thing you missed last week, Stephen, I know this is going to be very annoying, was the hottest day on record.
Devastated.
And something that all but the biggest nerds in the power industry also missed. But the UK nearly went into an electricity blackout. Bloomberg opinion columnist Javier Blas is one of the biggest nerds in the power industry. He spoke to Lizzie Burden and Caroline Hepker about this earlier on.
Yeah, one moment on July the 20th, that was last Wednesday, we have to pay to import electricity from Belgium £9,724 per megawatt hour. That, to put it in context, is about 5,000% higher than the typical price of electricity. And the need for that incredible price is that there was a bottleneck on the grid around London, and the only way to get electricity into that London area was not from the rest of the United Kingdom, but actually through an interconnector that comes across the English Channel from Belgium. So that was the kind of the last resort exercise. If that had failed, well, the only other option was to start cutting electricity to businesses and homes.
Exactly. So you've got all this aging infrastructure in the UK on top of Russia's war. How likely are we to see future blackouts or the government having to pay these nosebleed prices again and again?
Well, the problem is that the government pays those nosebleeds, but actually at the end of the day, we pay those nosebleeds ourselves, because those prices, over time, they get reflected on our utility bills. So it is all of us consumers who pays those prices. When you talk to people in the industry, they think that the whole of Europe is, and also North America in some ways, is sleepwalking into a blackout at some point. When you talk to the engineers who run the grid day in, day out, they really are at times surprised that nothing bad has happened. We are not investing enough in the grid, not here in the UK, not in Europe, not in the United States or Canada. And we need to do that because the generation has changed. We have more solar and wind power that they are produced in different places than where the previous generation was. And also the demand after many years of lackluster growth on electricity demand. Now we are beginning to have more demand growth just because we are electrifying everything. We are installing heat pumps and we are having electric vehicles, and that means more electricity.
Yeah, absolutely. Javier, you've been, I think, kind of banging the drum in the last few weeks and sort of shouting about this problem to some fairly cloth-eared politicians. Do you think that politicians in the UK are really waking up to this issue in the midst of a kind of leadership battle for between Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak?
I don't think so. I mean, it's a bit... I cannot really understand. The utility bills for everyone in the United Kingdom are going to increase between 60 and 70% in the next few weeks for October. That is going to put a big chunk of the UK population into energy poverty. They are going to be spending more than 10% of their income paying electricity and gas. And you hear the leadership on the Tory party, and it's all about China and sending immigrants into Rwanda. I'm absolutely mesmerized. This is a crucial issue, and it's not just for really poor people. Middle-class voters are going to be under massive pressure. The typical average household in the United Kingdom, particularly outside London, takes home about £32,000 a year. They are going to have to spend more than 10% of that money just on electricity and gas. That's a crisis, yeah, and it's happening now.
And that's gross, not net, right?
And that's gross, yeah. Effectively. That's a gross, that's not net of taxes. And you look at that net of taxes, probably a typical UK family is going to spend about 15% of their net pay in electricity and gas. That's not one of the top 3-5 issues for any politician right now. I don't care what size of the aisle they are. I'm absolutely surprised. I think that is going to be a massive shock when people come back from holiday after, you know, in August, late August, and they discover the amount of money that they're going to have to devote just to pay electricity and gas. If we have a cold winter, it's just going to be a big problem.
Bloomberg Westminster. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcast.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV+.